ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
I am sorry to ask this already, but have you started your Christmas shopping yet? If you're already adding things to your cart, maybe cute toys for the kids or grandkids, the colourful ones that are water resistant and stain resistant, well, you might want to think again, because a new report out of Europe has shown that a few big name companies are creating kids' toys that might have harmful levels of chemicals on them, which is obviously not good news. But at this point, is it even possible to avoid nasty chemicals that are already out there in the world? With me is Dr. Rachel Wakefield-Rann, Research Principal at the Institute for Sustainable Futures at the University of Technology, Sydney. Rachel, welcome to Life Matters.
Hi, Tegan. Thanks for having me.
So you weren't involved in this report, but it's very much in your wheelhouse. Can you tell me what it's all about?
Yeah, sure. So the reports come out from a consumer rights group called Euroconsumers that are based in the EU, and they found evidence of widespread and really alarming failures in the safety of children's products that are sold on online digital marketplaces, so places like Shein and Temu. And these failures include things like choking hazards, flammability, and the presence of hazardous chemicals. So really, really concerning stuff, although maybe not entirely surprising.
Yeah, I think the one that I'm sort of interested to hear is what you mean by hazardous chemicals. How dangerous are we talking?
They don't go into a huge amount of detail here. They mention heavy metals directly, but the types of chemicals that are often found through independent testers in children's products include PFAS chemicals, different groups of
forever
flame
chemicals.
Retardants. Yeah, that's forever chemicals, sorry. And also things like bisphenol, so a lot of people would know BPA and BPS, and phthalates are another big one. So they're just some of the ones that are kind of coming up pretty regularly in independent testing.
Those are chemicals that people are concerned about, but they are in a lot of goods that we already have a lot of contact with in our daily lives. How is the risk of exposure to these through kids' toys different to what a kid might be encountering throughout their life?
Okay, so there's a couple of things. So kids are more vulnerable to exposures, so it's kind of just worth mentioning that to start with. So because of the way that kids interact with the world, they're kind of crawling around on the grounds, inhaling kind of dust particles close to the ground. They're putting everything in their mouths. And they just have this kind of greater contact level with products. So exposure via any products is going to be greater with kids. And also their capacity to process these products is far reduced compared to adults. And that's because their organs are still developing and they just have smaller bodies. So the risk to kids is higher as well. So that goes for any products, really. But for toys, I guess the intention of toys is that the kids are really, really directly interacting with them. So they're, you know, any kid really under the age of two, you can expect any toy is going to go in their mouth. And that, you know, is probably also the case for lunchboxes. So I strongly advocate that anything that's designed to come in contact with a kid is safe to put in a kid's mouth. But toys are an interesting category as well because they are likely to have probably quite a few plasticizer chemicals added to them. And plasticizer chemicals are the chemicals that we add to plastics to make them colourful, bendy, basically anything we want the plastic to be. And some of the other qualities such as stain resistance, water resistance, resistance to fire and flames, the chemicals used to make the plastics resistant to those things are often really concerning. So PFAS, again, forever chemicals, is one example of the chemicals added to prevent those things. So based on what people want from toys, there is kind of a high probability that there might be some of these chemicals added.
When we're talking about the sorts of toxins that you're referring to, things like flame retardants or other things that change the nature of a plastic toy, what kind of health effects are we worried about here?
Yeah, so there's quite a broad range. So one category of harm, I suppose, is carcinogens or mutagens, so they're kind of cancer-causing products. There's also a range of endocrine-disrupting products, so they're the types of chemicals that will disrupt your hormonal system, and your hormone systems are responsible for a whole range of bodily functions. So anything related to reproduction and development, certain types of cancers. And then there are also kind of neurodevelopmental and neurological issues associated with a number of these products, but it's difficult to say in a really specific way, this chemical is associated with this outcome, because there are just thousands of these chemicals, so we'd have to kind of spend quite a long time going through each individual one. But broadly, they're the types of health outcomes that have been associated with those categories of chemicals.
Are these the sorts of health outcomes that we'd be likely to see in an acute sense, like within a couple of hours or days of a child playing with a toy like this? Or is it sort of just like this lifetime accumulative risk that might not show up until years or decades down the track?
Yeah, that's right. That's a really good question. It's one that I think has probably inhibited fast action on this. So a lot of the health effects are long-term and they are cumulative, but also there's what's often called cocktail effects. So there's a number of chemicals combining to produce novel effects in people's bodies. And also there's a bit of an old saying in chemistry that's quite outdated now, that is that the dose makes the poison. So there's an assumption that the higher the dose of something, the worse the effect. But a number of people now advocate for that to be switched to the timing makes the poison. So kids go through these kind of critical development windows when they're vulnerability to being affected by particularly endocrine disrupting chemicals actually changes. So when DNA is being kind of activated to release hormones and do different things at particular times, you're particularly vulnerable to being affected by a chemical that's mimicking a hormone, for example, during that time. So it could be kind of a one-off or like a kind of limited time frame that a kid is exposed in that could have a great impact, or it could be a cumulative impact over many years that produces these kind of harmful outcomes. So because these chemicals are so ubiquitous and because they have different effects depending on like the timing of the exposure and the body that they're exposed to, it's really hard to say definitively, if you always consume chemical X at this rate, you'll always get X type of cancer because it doesn't manifest that way in the real world.
You are listening to Life Matters on ABC Radio National. I'm Tegan Taylor talking to Dr. Rachel Wakefield-Rand, who's the research principal at the Institute for Sustainable Futures at University of Technology Sydney, about a new report out of Europe just showing how many harmful chemicals there are on kids' toys. I wonder if it makes you think differently about how you buy, or if this is something that you're already considering. Do you have a rule book for how you choose toys and presents that help you avoid the bad stuff? Rachel, this report's measuring these products against European standards. How does that compare to standards in Australia?
It's an interesting category, I suppose, because when people go onto these kind of online marketplaces, they're not buying from a shop in Australia, they're buying from an online marketplace. And the ACCC here in Australia does offer some protection. I'm not an expert in consumer law, I'll just note that. But I do know that they have identified shopping from these kind of online platforms as a safety priority this year. But at this stage, the protections aren't as great as the EU. So the EU has a recently updated kind of regulatory framework called the General Product Safety Regulation, and that goes a lot further in terms of requiring detailed technical documentation, traceability from these online marketplaces. And they also apply what we call the precautionary principle, which ensures that products must be deemed safe before they're even sold, even if all potential risks aren't fully known. And they do a range of things to kind of help ensure compliance to this. And one of them is this kind of extensive monitoring and use of kind of third-party testers and things like that that will help ultimately pick up on these breaches and safety concerns that we see in this report.
So if you're shopping for kids' toys, what are some of the things you can look out for to be choosing safer products?
Well, the first thing I always say when asked this question is that parents and grandparents really shouldn't be required to have chemistry degrees or access to a lab in order to ensure that their products are safe. And at the moment, there's just very, very few assurances that what we're buying online from these types of marketplaces are safe. So I guess the first thing I'd say is please put greater pressure on your members of parliament and others to just ask, say, can you please help ensure these regulations are tightened so that there are greater protections to ensure that anything we buy to import into Australia is safe. So I think that's always got to be the first step. But for now and for when we're kind of shopping, I'd say there's kind of three main strategies that you could employ. The first would be to, instead of going to one of these online marketplaces, shop from a retailer that you have some trust in. And that trust can be established through the claims that are made on, say, a retail website where they say that they only allow products that have been tested by third-party certification systems or that provide additional assurances that enable you to trust that anything on that website is safe and tested. The second thing you can look out for is labelling on the products themselves. So there are a number of third-party labelling schemes that also provide assurances, one of which is kind of an EU one called CE, and it's a pretty basic level of assurance to show that it complies with EU standards, but that does offer kind of some comfort. So that's just a kind of simple label that says the letter C and the letter E. And the third thing is, I guess, to kind of become familiar with the types of claims that are made on products that may have these chemicals in them. So any plastic product that's advertised as being stain, water or flame resistant, I would be quite suspicious of. And then plastic products that are kind of like sticky or foamy or generally non-porous, they're probably a little bit more likely to have things added to them just to give them those kind of affordances that we can see. So it's not a fail-safe measure, but may help a little bit guide some of that decision-making.
Rachel, thanks so much for joining me today.
Thanks, Tegan.
Dr. Rachel Wakefield-Rand is the Research Principal at the Institute for Sustainable Futures at University of Technology, Sydney.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.